You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 73 of Take a Bow. I'm your host, Eli Tokash, and this week we have another very exciting episode. We have a very exciting episode with a very good friend of mine. He and I have known each other for the past, like, 7 years, I want to say. Regardless, he's another child actor, which seems to be the preferred guests on these shows. It's amazing how well these child actor episodes do. And now he's killing it in the TV land as he plays Eli Stabler in Law & Order Organized Crime. So exciting stuff here. If you don't know already, it's Nikki Torsha, who has been a very requested guest on this show. For those of you who may not know Nikki Torsha, he also does the music, this wonderful music for Take a Bow, that you all hear in between these little intros and the interview, which is kind of my favorite part of the episodes. Honestly, I love that little beat. Anyways, let's dive right in, because we have a great episode coming up, and he talks about so many great things, and we reminisce on a lot of really, really fun memories. It gives a informative kind of type interview or in conversation, but a lot of it too is also just like reminiscing and kind of giving everyone a peek behind the curtain of what it was like when we did a show together. We talked a lot about kind of memories and how it all worked, and we focused a lot on A Christmas Story, which was the show that we did together. So that's coming right up. But first, I have to talk about some of the amazing things that I've seen this past couple weeks. Okay, so I dropped the ball and did not talk about Dear Evan Hansen last week when I promised that I would. And I just want to say that I apologize in advance, because literally I like stopped and I submitted the audio and I was like, oh my God, I didn't talk about Dear Evan Hansen, and like I have been waiting. So now's my chance to do so. Everyone, buckle up. Dear Evan Hansen was absolutely incredible. Okay. I don't care what anybody else says. I don't care who's going to judge me for saying that I really enjoyed the movie. You know, if you saw Dear Evan Hansen on Broadway and you saw Ben Platt in Dear Evan Hansen on Broadway, you're not going to have a problem with seeing Dear Evan Hansen the movie, okay? Like, for us theater people that are going to see it, which are the people who are going to see it because that is the audience of Dear Evan Hansen, we're going to love it. Okay, it's like the movie critics and the movie buffs who don't like movie musicals and who's really like by the book and the film industry and blah blah blah. All these like unwritten rules that are kind of like come up with by critics. I don't know. It's just like, it's madness, and I feel like the movie deserves more positive feedback and a more positive response, because I think it was done very, very well. I thought Ben Platt was incredible, arguably a better performance than the musical. I appreciated how they kind of toned a lot down because it was more for movie, but in a way that it like helped the story, you know. It didn't like hurt the story, because, you know, they took stuff out. They took out 4 songs and they added 2. I did miss Disappear a lot. I would have loved to have heard Colton Ryan, who played Jared, sing Disappear. But they gave him another song, which was really beautiful. That is not in the musical. So maybe, I guess that was like the cancellation. Anybody has a map? Did Anybody Have a Map was cut. To Break in a Glove was cut, although there was references to it. And then there was one other cut. Good for You was cut. And I thought that was interesting because I liked what that did for the story. But they did give Alana a song, and that was kind of like her only like main song in the show, so they gave her own song, so maybe that was a cancellation. And they obviously, like, Jared has his moment in Sincerely Me, and the mom has her moment in So Big So Small. So I guess they kind of just got rid of Anybody Have a Map and To Break in a Glove, and they just nixed it, and then the rest kind of made up for it, I guess, and kind of just switched things up. Either way, I thought both of them were fantastic. I mean, I will say I'm attached to the Broadway music. However, I found this music to be incredible. I'm actually really addicted to Anonymous Ones, which is the new song that Alana has. And I would love to have heard Crystal and Lloyd sing this song because I think it would have been amazing. But nonetheless, it was still amazing. The score was incredible. The acting was incredible. It was toned down. They made Jared gay. They had all of these like little changes that kind of just like progressed the story and kind of made sense. And then of course they, you know, you're sitting down and you're in the theater, right? And you're like, oh my God, this is like word for word the musical. And then 5 minutes in, when you forget that Evan Hansen is played by Ben Platt, who's like actually like 29 and not 18, it kind of just slips out of your mind, people, as soon as you see it, I promise. Anyways, that was another dig. I'm sorry. I will be less passive. shoot, where was I going with that? I was saying that when you're like 5 minutes in and then you're like, wait, no, it's actually not going to be a word for word reiteration of the musical. And so I really enjoyed it. I loved everyone's performances. I don't know. It's just like it was so different yet so similar all at the same time. And, you know, like you see it like the first way you see it is always the way that you're going to remember it. So like the whole time I was just like envisioning it with like the people on Broadway and stuff like that. I don't know. That's just me. But I thought nonetheless, incredible. It's going to 100% win some award. Pazik and Paul did an incredible job with the arrangements for the new movie and their small changes that they had made. Ben Platt, arguably a better performance than he had in his Tony Award winning performance in the musical. And yeah, I mean, I can't say enough good things about it. I've literally tried to recommend it to everyone who has said it's bad. And I've kind of fought them on it because I don't think it's true and I don't think it was bad. And people just listen to the critics. And so I'm trying to be my own critic and encouraging other people to go see this freaking movie because I thought it was so good. Next topic. Let's see what else I saw. Is This a Room? Oh my God. Okay. Is This a Room is currently playing and it literally just opened on Monday. So happy opening. Is This a Room? Yes. Round of applause. Yes. And this show was absolutely incredible. Now I've said on here before that I am not as into plays as I am a musical. Okay. And I'm going to explain that in the next show that I saw. So I saw Is This a Room? And usually during plays, I get kind of lost, you know, midway through. And I'm just like, all right, when's there a song going to break out so that like I get some energy or whatnot? But in this freaking play, that was never the case. Okay. This play was absolutely incredible. This is the interrogation between the FBI and Reality Winner, who was, I don't know, some of you may know, some of you may not, but I'm going to explain it. She kind of had a lead that the 2016 election kind of got interfered with the Russian government. And there was some sketchy things going on within the 2016 election. She was trying to leak it to news sources. And then FBI got a hold of this information that she was trying to, she, they got like a tip that she was trying to leak these, this story and was trying to report it to news sources and whatnot. So she like wrote this article, right? And then sent it to like news publishers, news companies and like publishers and whatnot. So she, is questioned, so the FBI gets it and basically stopped it from getting to the news source, and they interfere and they just block that message going through. Fascinating stuff. Absolutely, like, crazy that this, like, even happens. And, like, the FBI, like, reads all of that. And it's just, like, it's insane what goes on in this government. And this show really does that for you. And I'm really getting into that here in college. I'm in microeconomics, and I'm just, like, I'm just so fascinated by all of this. So this was a great time for me to see the show. So Emily Davis is making her Broadway debut in this show. And she plays Reality Winner. So she's like the main girl. All of these actors barely leave the stage. She does not, at all. She's on the stage every second. And then the FBI agents are pretty much on the stage the entire time as well. It is absolutely fascinating. It leaves you thinking. It leaves you like, what is my life? It like literally leaves you with so many thoughts and so many questions. And like literally I like the whole time, it's just like, whoa. Like the next sentence is like, it just gets crazier and crazier. And just the fact that like I was watching the show and I was like, Eli, this is a real conversation that actually happened. Like, I feel like it made it just like that much better and that much like mind-boggling inside of my head. Now I saw it in previews. It was a couple weeks ago actually, and I just like haven't mentioned it because it just slipped my mind. And we've had the Broadway flea market and the Tonys and everything. It was just madness. And it was actually in between the Tony and Broadway flea market, so it was just a week or two ago. And kid you not, I like I said, not always the biggest fan of plays. Absolutely loved this play. I will 100% be back. I literally, like, this is a show that I would go see again, and I don't do that often with like any type of shows on Broadway. So huge shout out to Is This a Room. I really hope it does well and gets the press and ticket sales that it deserves. Dori Berenstein, who is a part of the Broadway Podcast Network, is actually one of the producers on it. So like huge shout out to her for making this happen and making this come to Broadway and tell this story that even though it's a real story and it's something that's been reported, she was in jail and everything like that. I still like didn't know about it. Like I still wasn't aware of this case and everything. And interestingly enough, she was in jail indefinitely throughout the Trump administration. And the second that the Biden administration came in, they kind of released her and they are just monitoring her now. So I also thought that was interesting. They threw her in jail just to basically ensure that they wouldn't leak anything else. So I don't know what the thought process was, but I thought it was interesting that kind of when she got put in 2016 and then got out in 2020, which is like right when Biden took over. So I was like, interesting. Wild stuff. Great story, great show. We'll definitely highly recommend Is This a Room. Now, for my favorite that I've been talking about for weeks on this show, on this podcast, Waitress the Musical. Everyone, I saw Waitress the Musical again, and I cannot be happier. I literally just got home from it, and I'm literally recording right now when I came home, and it's 11:40 p.m. right now, and I am talking about all of my incredible show endeavors, but Waitress. I saw Waitress again, and I'm so happy. I could not be happier. I saw it with Sarah Bareilles. Apparently, she was out last night, so I was freaking out. I was like, oh my god, please make her in it. But I was like, she only has like 4 shows left, how can she not do it? She did it. Insane. Okay, so lots to talk about here. So this show, like, this it's just absolutely incredible. I've seen this show like 7 times now. I think this was like my 6th or 7th time seeing it. And I like it more and more every time. And I also like am like, oh, did they change that every time? Now, that could be because they actually did change stuff because it was like off Broadway and it just like reopened. And technically, this is like a revival. So they can change things. But I was like, I don't know. Like, I was kind of questioning it. Anyways, not important. So now for the best part of the whole show tonight, I don't know if anybody, if all of you have seen the show, some of you may. For those of you who have seen the show and you understand the context of It Only Takes a Taste, incredible. Okay, so Drew Gehling walks on stage for the scene. His mic doesn't work. And everyone like kind of picks up on it, but no one's like having a big deal about it. So anyways, we're sitting there and we're just like admiring the fact that Drew Gehling is giving his best 1800s theater performance where he's just projecting his talking voice to the back row of the mezzanine. And it's just like giving, and he's just giving it all and he's killing it. And Sarah Bareilles is totally getting a kick out of it. And both of them are. And they're kind of having fun with it. That's like how funny this is. But the audience still wasn't like, they didn't want to like make it awkward or anything. So they were just like kind of going along with it. So then in the middle of the scene, like right before the song comes on, Drew Gehling's like, hey, Jenna, which is Sarah Bareilles' role. Do you mind if we switch seats? So the reason that they did that, no one picked up on it except me and my friend Alexa Nijak, who went to the show with me. Everyone thought it was part of the bit and part of like the scene. But it was actually because the entire time Sarah Bareilles would like talk and like do her thing. And when it was Drew's turn to talk, which is Dr. Pomatter, and they kind of have like this relationship in a way. And so every time like Drew had to talk, Sarah would kind of like turn her head to where the mic would like pick up his voice in like some capacity. And it was like hilarious. So Drew obviously picked up on this and was like, oh, do you mind if we switch seats? Basically saying, so you don't have to keep turning your head and blah, blah, blah. It was incredible because they kind of like had this like awkward laugh in it. And it like the audience was laughing, but no one understood like why. And then it's still like kind of working, kind of not, because it's like this weird dynamic in the scene where they can't really be like super close together yet. They're kind of like standoffish, but she's trying to help him out. It's hilarious. Okay, and then the music starts, but the scene is still going, and Drew like picks up his cue late because they had to finish the scene, so he starts like mid song, and then Sarah Bareilles is just like cracking up on stage, and all of a sudden she goes, wait, start it over, and the audience goes like freaking nuts, and the audience is loving life right now. And she was like, you all, like, she like turns to the audience like, you all understand what's happening right now, right? We're trying to share a mic, blah blah blah, like, sorry, like like literally like has a conversation with the audience and like in between like this setup for the song. And it's just like absolutely hilarious. And so they start the song over and it's just still like not working out. And now everyone's like caught on to the fact that there is no microphone for Drew Gehling when he's supposed to have a microphone, and they're kind of sharing it obviously because she kind of announced it. And so like everyone's enjoying this bit, even though it's still not working. So then eventually, one of the ensemble members comes on and gives Drew Gehling a handheld mic, like a mic that you would like perform with, not like your typical show microphone. And so he incorporates the microphone into the show. Like, so he gives him the mic, right? The ensemble member, they give him the mic, and he goes to sing in it. That doesn't work. And he's like, is this a joke? Like, literally, like, flat out said, what is happening? Like, he said something. I can't remember exactly. Anyways, So I don't want to be misquoted, but he was like totally like adding a bit to it. And it was just, it was the best performance of It Only Takes a Taste that I've ever seen in Waitress. And the audience was loving life. It was literally like the talk of everything. Like Drew Gehling's performance tonight was absolutely incredible. That's another thing I want to talk about. Sarah Bareilles, Christopher Fitzgerald, and Drew Gehling. I don't mean this in the, I'm only saying this to compliment their performances in the show, but I truly don't think anybody can perform their roles better than Sarah Bareilles plays Jenna, Christopher Fitzgerald plays Ogie, and Drew Gehling plays Dr. Pomander. Now, I know a lot of them, all three of them, have had the most time in those roles and with the show. Christopher Fitzgerald's been with it since it opened, same with Drew Gehling, and obviously Sarah Bareilles, like, since it was a thought because she wrote it. So it's kind of hard to beat that. And the way that they are with their characters, like, they are the character. Like, it just, it's insane. Like, and then their dynamics together, Drew and Sarah's dynamic together, is just absolutely incredible. Christopher Fitzgerald literally, like, has standing ovations every show because he's just absolutely hilarious. It's incredible. Anyways, that's enough about Waitress. Drew, they're just all so good. I had a blast. I literally, this is the magic of live theater, because you go and you're like, oh, I'm seeing Waitress for the seventh time. Meanwhile, it's like, I saw Waitress for the seventh time and something that's never happened before happened tonight. And so, like, that's the beauty of live theater, because you just never know what's going to happen. And it's a different show every night. And the audience was absolutely going bonkers because it was like her, it's part of her last week of doing the show. Just incredible stuff. So huge thank you to Waitress and Sarah Bareilles and everyone who made that happen tonight. And it was incredible. It was so funny. Sorry, I'm getting over it. So moving on. The actual, like, bit of news that I want to talk about is that Waitress is having a scheduling change, actually. So starting November 1st, they will primarily have Wednesdays off, and they will, which is usually like a two show day. So now they have two shows available, and those two shows are going one to Saturday night and one to Monday. So they will be doing two shows Saturday, two shows Sunday, and then a Monday evening performance, which is going to be something very exciting for everyone in the Broadway community, especially for those who work in the community, because they will actually be able to go see the show both. And they will have two options, both on Sunday night and Monday night. And that's very exciting for when you work in the industry. And it also is great for ticket sales, because it's like, oh, what show is going to be on Monday? Oh, there's like three, and it's Waitress is one of them. Let me go check out Waitress. So it's very good stuff, very exciting stuff for Waitress. Great for like the show itself. And I think that's going to be really great moving forward for the whole community. I think that I know Wednesday is kind of weird to have like a day off as someone who works in the industry, but I think it's going to be great, because then they can go see the shows on Monday. The other shows can go see your show. Audiences will now have more options to go see a show on Monday. I just think it's great for everyone involved. So just a little note there, nothing too major, but I thought, you know, once you're in it, you're like, you understand and whatnot. So, but huge congrats. I know I said it last week. Huge congrats to Chicken and Biscuits, Lots of a Colored Man, Tina Turner, the musical, Is This a Room? And then there were a couple others that opened. Everyone had wildly successful openings, which is so exciting. I love seeing all this new, art thriving literally right now. And, Chicken and Biscuits, I heard, is just absolutely incredible. So I can't wait to go see that. Anyways, you've heard me talk long enough on this intro. I'm going to turn it over to Nikki Torsha, and then I'm going to do a drama dictionary in the outro. So stay tuned, everyone. But right now, let's turn it over to Nikki Torsha. Nikki Torsha, curtain up. This week, we have a highly anticipated show with a highly anticipated guest. You may know him from Kinky Boots, The King and I, A Christmas Story, or Elf the Musical, or you may watch him every Thursday as Eli Stabler in Law & Order's Organized Crime, and you listen to his music every Thursday when you listen to Take a Bow. So everyone, welcome to the show, Nikki Torsha. Thanks for being here, Nikki.
Thanks for having me, man.
How are you?
That was a wonderful introduction.
Oh my God. Did you like that? They're watching you every Thursday.
They're watching me. They're stalking me.
They're stalking
me. I'm being hovered over. No, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh my God.
Appreciate it.
I feel like I want to say thank you for having me. We are currently in your home doing this.
Yeah,
So thank you.
No. I feel like we've been talking about me coming on here for a while.
I know.
Yeah.
You're just like a star, though. You're like a TV star, and you're like so busy.
No, I mean, I may be busy, but I'm not a star, but I appreciate the thought.
You're getting there. We're all getting there, right?
Yeah.
So the way I usually like to start off these episodes and whatnot is kind of asking everyone like what got them inspired and whatnot to start doing what they're doing now.
Yeah. So my parents were both musicians. My dad was a sax player and a clarinet player, and my mom was a pianist. They met in music theory class, so very romantic musician story. My mom was a director in the middle school, the local middle school back where I grew up outside of Pennsylvania as a part of her music teaching job. And I was always in the theater as a kid. Painting the sets, you know, the black boxes, painting all black as a toddler and all those stuff. So I was in the environment a lot. And one day, I guess I just wanted to do productions of my own.
Yeah.
It was probably very stubborn of me to say, like, I want to do my own things now, Mom. I don't want to be with you. But one thing led to another. And, you know, now I'm doing it.
Was it always like theater, or was like TV and film ever a thought?
TV and film kind of came later.
Okay.
And later meaning when I was like 13. So yeah, it was pretty much always theater and musicals, and you know, singing was always my strong suit.
Yeah.
I was never a great actor. I could sing pretty well, but so that was the thing that kind of led me to the shows that I did, I think, but I had to develop as an actor later.
Sure.
After, as you know, the voice change and the growth spurt.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it was always kind of theater.
Okay. Yeah. And then like, I know you obviously play a lot of instruments, you have songs of your own, you create music all the time. Like, was that always in there with theater, or like that came later too?
I think that came later during that period that I wasn't able to do Broadway anymore because of, you know, age and finding other artistic avenues to kind of branch out in and do. And, you know, my parents both being musicians, it's very easy for me to pick up an instrument and to learn quickly because my parents are knowledgeable in that. So, you know, I'm mainly a bass player, but, you know, so my parents were able to kind of push me along.
That's cool.
So it's easy. I'm lucky to have parents who are musicians. So.
Right.
Yeah.
You were also a very tall kid. Like I always said, like you were always one of the tallest ones in A Christmas Story and everything. Like you were just very tall as a kid. And like, I don't know, like it wasn't all, like always age, I feel like, you know, because it's just like Broadway's like so like every little detail counts on you. It's like crazy.
Well, when I did Kinky Boots, I was the vacation swing.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up, and I was going to be renewed for another 6 months, but I was 4'6" and a half and not 4'6". So I didn't continue. So that's, you know,
so tough.
Yeah. It goes to show you kind of, how the industry works at that age, but you know,
right. Yeah. I know. And it's things that like people don't even think about, you know, like how much goes into all of it. So you started obviously doing regional theater in Philly, right?
Yeah.
Which is where you're from, until you booked A Christmas Story.
Yeah. With you.
With me.
With you.
You poor soul. So like, what was that hop like from going from like regional theater to now you're performing in Madison Square Garden with 5,000 people.
Yeah, alongside you.
Alongside me, two times a week.
Yeah, so.
And then you eight times.
Right. I don't think I understood that until I got older.
Right.
I don't know about you, but it was just, we always had such a great time as a group of kids.
Right.
That it was just playing make-believe on stage with each other. Mm-hmm. And it was never about the, it's weird. And I don't want to say it was never about the performance, because I think we all love to put ourselves out there, but a lot of it was just about each other.
Yeah.
That's how I felt.
A lot of it was the stage was our playground, you know?
Yeah.
Like we in rehearsals and whatnot, like we would go to Union Square and whatnot, like, yes. You know, like in between tutoring and rehearsal and whatnot. But like then we would like play on the playground there, and we would get like our sports fix, whether it was basketball or just like running up like this giant globe or whatever it was, like, and then we could go to the theater and kind of get our creative fix, you know. And it was just like another form of playground that we would just have. Even like backstage, like we wouldn't stop, like we would play like I Have Arrived and continue to play, you know.
I forgot about I Have Arrived.
Oh my god, really?
I remember when I think the thing I missed most about the show, now that you said that, I think I missed that game the most.
Yeah.
I remember not really missing the performance, but, you know, hearing our wrangler, John Mara, talk about everybody in Matilda continuing to play I Have Arrived.
Right.
And that was what I was jealous about. I was like, I don't get to play I Have Arrived anymore.
Oh my God. Stop it.
It wasn't like, I'm not in the show. It's ended. We closed. It was, I can't play I Have Arrived.
Right.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
That was definitely a highlight. Like, even, like, you know, like, even Lucas, Gabby, and I, who weren't on every night, would, like, come over. And like when we weren't performing and still like come to play with you guys just because it was like too much fun.
I don't remember the game. I don't remember how to play it.
Really? Oh my God. You make like a 20-30 second skit. And at some point in the skit, you have to say, I have arrived. And you have to just
that was
make
it?
Yeah. And you have to just make an environment of something. And it was different every night. And everyone came up with different like reasons to say, I have arrived for however many performances we had in your Christmas story. It was so much fun.
I remember us being like playing it together, but I don't remember that like what we were doing or the context of.
Yeah. That. Wasn't it like in between right before we would go on for Somewhere Hovering Over Indiana?
Dude,
I don't know. Okay.
The show.
That's remember. Okay.
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah. So, but like, but also like, going back to the whole like sports things with Madison Square Garden, I mean, like that's just like another aspect for you and I that we kind of experienced, and even Luke Spring. We like literally when we were off stage or like at intermission, we would just like be back playing Madden on Xbox or something, you know?
We play NHL.
Yeah, NHL, all of those. Like we would just like, but like for us being in Madison Square Garden, we were like, oh my God, can you believe this? So like there were like two aspects to us like performing there.
Yeah,
it's cool.
That's funny. I don't even think I thought about that.
Really?
Either. No. Until because I wasn't living in New York at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was still living in Pennsylvania. If I performed at what I guess I forget what it was back then, but the old Philly Stadium. I think it's Citizens Bank Park now, but I think it maybe it was still Citizens Bank Park then. think that would have resonated for me. But when I moved to New York and I understood the significance of Madison Square Garden and following the Knicks, and I mean, I follow my Philly teams more than I do my New York teams, but then I was like, oh, that's cool. We performed there. We were there, you know? But I don't think I had that realization until later.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's okay. But like, I know, like, I'm making you like remember all of these things. Like,
no, I love it.
What was your favorite like memory that you remember
from Christmas Story? Oh, God.
Oh, God.
I don't know. I think I said it is just our time backstage.
Yeah.
And everybody having fun and the tutoring sessions and all those things were probably my favorite memories from the show.
I have to say, those tutoring sessions, there's nothing better than doing school in like a theater setting or like even like an on-set setting. And we'll definitely talk more about that when we talk about Law and Order, because I know you just recently had your last one. Yes, so I definitely want to get into that with you. But like, you know, this is like your first like tour. This is your first like kind of major show with A Christmas Story and everything. So like, what was that like? I mean, this is like a new process for you, and we're touring from city to city, and we're going to school, like not in our regular schools. Yeah. Like, you know, like when you're at home doing shows, you can go to school during the day at your regular school and whatnot, or like go online or whatever. But like, what was just, how was this adjustment period for you?
I think it kind of became normal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really remember what it was like at first. I think I was just having so much fun that whatever adjustment that I had kind of just...
It wasn't even a thought.
It wasn't even a thought. You know, because I did Christmas Story was first, and then I kind of went to every other project like right away.
Right.
You know, maybe a month or two in the middle, and if it was a month or two, I was doing regional and not, you know, was kind of like this one long 4 year, or I guess maybe 3-5, whatever, how many years of just kind of this roller coaster high ride of just this, like this thrill, and you're on a high for that long. And it definitely made the early teenage years harder, because you're used to performing all the time and getting that constant recognition, or something about, you know, people standing and applauding for you every night. When you don't have that, it's like, you know, what are you going to do?
There's a piece of you missing, you know, it's tricky.
Very metaphorical, but it's true. It's really true.
Yeah. Well, talk to me, like, okay. So as I mentioned, maybe I didn't mention, but you did play Schwartz in A Christmas Story. So obviously when I say that, I have to ask the question that everyone's been waiting for. What was it like to get your tongue stuck to the pole every night?
Did it? What? Wait, you mean the Triple Dog Dare?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Cause Michael would get his tongue stuck. Yeah. Right? Okay.
He got his tongue stuck. That was a fun scene. That was really fun.
Yeah.
I think, that was a super fun one. I remember we did something before that scene where I would definitely often forget my lines in that part. I don't remember. We were definitely doing something. I remember like me and Alexa, Nijiak, being back on that side of the wing and talking with you or somebody. And then having to quickly run on stage and me being very flustered of like, what scene am I in?
Right.
But that was a fun one. Yeah, that's a classic scene.
It's a classic
scene. Yeah, it was good. Did I ever tell you the story about, you said me playing Schwartz, that I wasn't going to play Schwartz originally?
No.
Did I tell you that story? Well, I was cast as Swing.
Oh.
And then the guy who was going to play Schwartz, who I'll tell you off, recording, because I don't know if he would want me to say this, but he was cast as Schwartz and he was in another show on Broadway, and so they wouldn't let him out of his contract, so they asked me if I would like to play Schwartz. I was like, sure,
duh, yeah, that's awesome.
And it wasn't, at the time I said yes because I was nervous about learning all those tracks,
sure,
especially because I was younger. So when I had the opportunity just to play one role, I was like, yes.
Yeah.
So yeah,
That's awesome. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Maybe I did, and I just, like, it was a while ago.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. Look at you. You already got a promotion before it even started. Yeah. Look at that. It
was more of a situational promotion, but
yeah,
I guess a promotion nonetheless.
Do you remember how that worked? Like, the whole, like, pull in, like, getting his tongue stuck, you know?
It was a fake tongue.
It was a fake tongue?
Yeah.
I couldn't remember.
He just kind of clenched on it with his front teeth.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the adults would hand it to him behind the pole, I think. And then he would just clench it, and then somehow it got stuck.
Somehow it got stuck. I don't remember. Interesting. I know. I was, like, trying to remember, and I was like, you know what?
It was definitely a fake tongue that would stretch really far.
Yeah.
So that it was the cartoonish kind of effect. But
yeah, plus, like, for the people in the back of the 5,000 theater, they could see, like, you know.
See what's happening, yeah.
Yeah. So, oh, interesting. Well, there you have it. Love theater magic.
Yeah.
So then you made your Broadway debut in Kinky Boots, which you alluded to a little bit earlier, the Vacation Swing. Talk to me about your experience there. What was it like to, like, finally do some theater in New York? But I mean, like, you already did it in A Christmas Story, but, like,
it was great. That's still one of my favorite memories.
Yeah.
Because I guess technically that was my Broadway debut.
Sure.
Even though our Madison Square Garden thing was
I know.
Probably it feels Broadway, like it was Broadway. But technically, Kinky Boots was my Broadway debut, so that was a very fun night and experience.
Mm-hmm.
The story of getting Kinky Boots was also frantic. This theme will probably come up as we talk about the things that I've been in, as every time the audition process has been so frantic. Like, the more frantic it is, the more chance I have of getting it for some reason.
Right.
Great Christmas Story, I did, you know, 13 callbacks,
right?
12 or however many it was. And Kinky Boots, I was taking the New Jersey Transit from Pennsylvania, and our train got stuck in Secaucus.
Shut up.
Yeah, the last stop. And so I ended up being like 2 hours late for my
appointment
or something. Yeah. And so when I showed up, it was the casting director's lunch break. So I said, can I come in? And she said, sure, we're eating lunch, but if you don't mind, you know. So I just was in during their lunch break. People are on their phones. People are eating their salads.
Oh, my God.
You know, I did salad, probably, like, I don't know, 16 bars, 8 bars my song.
Uh-huh.
And they cut me off and said, thanks. And I was like, oh, my God, that was so embarrassing. They cut me off in the start of my song.
Sure.
And they told me to leave, and I had to go on their lunch break, and I ruined it. The train got stuck.
Right.
And on the way back, on the train back, I got a call from my agent and said, they want you to start, like, in 2 days.
What?
Yeah. And I learned the show. I mean, the kid role in that show is not a lot, but I learned the show on Tuesday afternoon. And then we did the show Tuesday night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So frantic and crazy, but, you know, that seems to be how it works out.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's such a cool story, though.
Yeah.
I hate that. I feel like that's been a trend with me, too. Not as far as, like, frantically and whatnot, but, like, I always feel like the auditions that I didn't do really well in, like, I feel like I could have done better, are the ones that I actually, like, happen to get. It's really bizarre.
Yeah. Or a lot of things that I got, you know, something was stressing me out that day, or where there was some silly drama at my elementary school.
Sure.
And I think, weirdly, it gets you out of your head. If you have some, especially as young actors, I feel like a lot of them, or at least I know I did this, was kind of plan out your scene, very rehearsing.
For sure.
Like, a very rehearsed way. And, you know, if you don't do it to the, you know, exactly how you planned it, it kind of throws you off.
Right.
But if you're out of your head and you're not even thinking about it, and you just kind of do the scene how it naturally feels in the moment, that's so much better than however you just would rehearse it by yourself in your room. Because whatever the reader is giving you is obviously different than how the voice in your head is saying.
Right.
You know? So I think that it was good that they were all frantic, because if I was worried about something else, I didn't have the energy to be concerned about what I was going to do in the audition, and just did it.
Right.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I agree. Well, that's good. Oh, so I always say, like, you know, they don't necessarily like consider A Christmas Story Broadway, but I feel like it was, and it was like good preparation for Broadway.
Yeah.
I mean, we were in New York. We got to meet like all the people. Like I said earlier, like we got in the habit of doing school park show, you know, like that whole thing. Did you feel that way like for Kinky Boots? Like, did you feel like there was a lot of similarities, or was there like another adjustment period?
It was very similar, if not the same, just a different show.
Right.
The same crowd I was hanging out with. The same people, the same parks, the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like the second show. It wasn't the first.
Totally. Yeah. And it was cool too, because like that whole season, it really seemed like literally everyone in A Christmas Story was like doing Matilda fighting Pippin, or like one of the shows, you know, Lion King, like something. And so like it really felt like we were all in the same show together without being backstage with one another.
Right.
You know? It was just a cool, it was a cool time to be on Broadway.
It was a very cool time. I'm not sure if it's like that anymore.
Yeah.
I don't.
There's not many kid shows.
There's not a lot of kid shows. And yeah, I think we all just kind of got lucky.
Yeah.
For that, that we were born and to happen like that, that whatever 5 year span or 6 year span.
Totally.
I think it was happening before us though, but yeah.
Yeah. It started before us, but I feel like it like grew, you know, like, cause Kinky Boots opened in 2015, so like it was all started in that area where it's continuing to grow.
Yeah.
And like it was cool because like even like the community was like still so strong that like Violet with Emerson Steele, like she would come over to the park, like even though it wasn't open anymore, like everyone was just still like coming over. School of Rock then opened, and like, you know, like it was just like it just kept getting bigger every like month, it seemed. It was really cool. So then you went on to do Elf, the musical.
Right.
And you played Michael Hobbs. Come on. Yeah. What a character. What
fun,
a show.
Fun role.
Oh my God. I can't imagine. Okay.
Did you ever do Michael?
No.
Okay.
I didn't. But you seem to have like a knack for these holiday shows.
I know.
What is it? Is it your charming face around the holidays? It warms everyone.
What I think it was what I was saying earlier is they didn't, those shows were very music driven and having that in my family and being that singing was my strongest thing. The big belty, you know, cliche Christmas stuff, which I think was, you know, up my alley. And you know, I had the chubby cheeks and the bangs and the whole spectacle.
The bangs, oh my gosh.
So I think it was just, whatever type cast their thing that was, it seemed to really work for me.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Do you still like listen? Because like I know like everyone when they see like Elf the musical, everyone's like so curious right away, like what kind of songs are in Elf the musical? Because it's just like not.
It's great music.
Yeah, it's great music.
Yeah.
I love the Buddy the Elf song. Like, that's like your big one, right?
Yeah. That one, and then the big one for Michael is the I don't know the name of the song, but the Without a Doubt There Is a Santa Claus.
Okay.
That's a really big one when Michael first sees Santa, you know. And that was great. That was an opportunity to do a bigger role in a show, because Christmas Story was the ensemble with all of us.
Right.
Kinky Boots was, you know, a very small part in the beginning and at the end kind of of an appearance. But Elf was a, you know, you have scenes by yourself and you have other songs by yourself. And it was a good stepping stone in terms of roles.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Especially because King and I was a pretty nice role.
Yeah. King and I was, yeah.
Yeah. Talk to me about it. Go ahead. Go into it.
King and I, I think that was the perfect show for me to leave off on, especially because I was going into TV and film, because that was almost like a play.
It really?
Was almost like a, it wasn't like a typical musical, I felt. I think it being Lincoln Center and being a very high regarded place and, you know, Bart Scheer, our director, he's just I mean, brilliant. And he is, you know, he really works with, he really tries to have the actor come out, and he loves, I mean, it's a really dramatic show. I mean, if right. you've seen King and I, it's like a really intense, like heavy subjects. So I think that really helped me moving forward into TV and film, because it was a dramatic role. It was some singing, but it was very acting based. And that was an adjustment. I had a lot of rehearsals throughout my entire run. I was doing rehearsals before the night shows, like every week, probably doing, you know, 3 or 4 rehearsals every week during the whole time.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy.
Just sharpening on the scenes, going over with Bart. I worked a lot with Bart's wife. She was amazing.
That's so cool.
And we would just meet together at the theater, and we would go up on the stage. Obviously, we would turn the lights on and go on the stage, and we would just work on it.
Just like you and her.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And we did that for a long time. So that was a lot of training, and definitely kind of gave me a new perspective of acting moving into the other stuff that I'm doing now. So I'm really glad that I got to do that, because again, I keep saying it, but gave me a new perspective.
Totally. Yeah. It really opened your acting chops, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think it started the idea of being an actor.
Right.
You know, I even remember in the first rehearsals, because really quickly, a story of how I went from Elf to King and I.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were in Dallas, an Elf, and I had sent in a tape earlier in the tour, but we had just closed in Dallas we were in Dallas for like maybe a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I flew on a red eye to New York City.
Oh my God.
On our travel day, and did the audition in the afternoon, and then took a red eye that night to Atlanta, our next stop, and then did the show. So, and then I got King and I, and we closed in Ohio on a Sunday. We traveled back to New York Monday, equity day off.
Oh my God.
And then Tuesday started rehearsals for King and I.
Jesus.
So it was like 1 year of just fluid shows. So I remember in the rehearsal process with Bart of, you know, me just having these weird tendencies that would not be a English boy from the 1800s.
Oh, sure.
You know, having my hands in my pockets, speaking a certain way.
Yeah.
My accent. We worked a lot on the accent about, you know, having the British accent that was specific to this time period and where I was born and what city and all that stuff. So it was really detailed based and really great for me to move into a more dramatic acting. Stuff.
That's so interesting, because I know you played Michael Banks in Mary Poppins too.
Right.
But obviously, like, there was a difference between that and...
Oh, for sure.
Oh, interesting.
That was treated, I guess, in the rehearsal process as every other musical. But I guess I can relate King and I. King and I was more similar to me to the stuff I do now on TV and film.
Sure.
In terms of the rehearsal process and the way Bart approached everything.
Sure.
Than all my other stage performances were.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like that though. That's cool.
Yeah, it was really great.
Everything, it seems like led you up to the next.
I just feel like I got so lucky with how
this
everything.
This whole journey is really cool.
I know. I feel like I got really lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And now talk to me too. Like, I mean, you've been in shows with a lot of kids, and then you've been in shows where there's like only 2 kids, you know, like King and I was another like heavy kid show, you know, that's a lot of kids. Yeah. Is that something that you enjoy where there's a bunch of people that you're your age and whatnot, or do you kind of enjoy building the relationships with adults too?
Well, that's funny you say that, because I've always felt like, and I guess you can talk about this too, is that we had to be friends with the adults.
Right.
So we had to learn how to get along with the adults.
Sure.
And obviously kids usually don't get along with adults because there's different ways of thinking. So I always felt like, I wouldn't say I preferred lots of kids or no kids.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously I had the 2 experiences, you know, Elf being just me and the other boy, Harper, who was... opposite me, who would transition.
I think I went to your Elf fitting.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Wasn't it across the street from Second Stage?
Maybe. It could have been.
We'll have to ask your mom. I don't know. I just feel like maybe I was staying with you guys that weekend. And they, I don't know. That was just a weird thing. Because then I met Harper, and then you guys came to Finding Neverland as well. Yeah, like...
I have a photo. Maybe you can put it on your Patreon. But I have a photo of us. Or I took a selfie of you sleeping.
Oh my God, stop it.
And you were very mad at me, I think, when I
did
that.
That's terrifying. I probably was sucking my thumb. Was I?
I don't think so.
Okay, good.
But yes, you were. You definitely did go to my outfitting now that you say that.
Yeah. Sure. Oh my God, that's so funny. Okay, continue, because then I threw you off. We were talking about kids and like you were comparing Harper and you. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I prefer either one, but I feel like I had to get along with adults very well.
Right.
The kids in King and I, we were kind of separated. Me and Benel, Fambrini, you know Benel.
Yeah.
We were just in a dressing room by ourselves because we were the quote-unquote older boys. And then there were the girls. And then there were the younger boys. And so we were just by ourselves.
Mm.
And most of my scenes were not with the other kids. Were with the adults.
Right.
And I spent a lot of time with the Wranglers and with the adult ensemble. And that was in King and I and Elf as well, because it was only one other kid. So me and Harper would just spend a lot of time with the adults. So I feel like even though I was in shows with a lot of us, I felt like I got along with the adults
better. Almost, yeah.
Or that was just how I had to be. It was a situational, you know?
Yeah, I think too, like, you know, when you're a kid in the industry and like you have all of these adults around you and they've like, I don't know, like, you know, it's a normal thing for a kid to look up to an adult. And so like when you're like going to rehearsal with them and you're seeing them and you're like, wow, you're really good. Like as kids, we like, we don't know we're good, you know, like, and like like even as like a person, you don't even like know how like, I don't know. You don't know how to evaluate yourself, but like you can like so easily evaluate someone else, especially someone who's older than you.
Definitely.
Or like that you look up to. So like I totally agree with that. Like I feel like even in like the Christmas Story rehearsals, you know, like we would always go up to Aaron Dilley and be like, your scene where you're just like so sad and you're like gonna cry and you're like having this like midlife crisis. It's just like so good every time. And she's like, thank you so much.
Yeah, I reached out to her recently actually because she works at Pace.
Oh my God, right.
Which is what I'm looking to go to.
Right.
So we're going to FaceTime in the next few days.
Oh, good.
It. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
She's wonderful.
She's so sweet. Yeah. And I just talked to John Bolton on this a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I love John Bolton. He's hilarious. What a riot. He was like out in his like ski cabin, like his like winter cabin up in New York, upstate New York and whatnot.
That's awesome.
He has two dogs now from the guy Bill Berlone who like had to bump his hounds. Yeah, he has like the dogs he adopted from him.
Oh,
you know,
so
like
nice.
It's really cool. So like everyone, he was saying like how just like connected A Christmas Story has still been in his life, you know. It's really cool.
That's awesome.
That family was really cool in Christmas Story. I know we keep alluding to it, but yeah. So let's talk about some Law and Order stuff, shall we? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what you're doing right now. You're currently on Law and Order Organized Crime. Y'all are in season 2.
Yeah.
So you guys are going strong, which is great to see. Hopefully
and we
continues.
Don't have a visual, but Eli is sitting in the Law and Order chair at the moment.
I know. I'm very cool. I feel very cool right now. I feel like I'm on set in a way. You know, I have like headphones and I got my computer. I'm like, wow. I'm like,
you're,
I'm living
you're doing
the life.
Edits on the next
episode. That's coming out Thursday or today because you guys will be listening to this on Thursday. It's so cool to see you up on TV. I don't know. It's always cool to see your friends on TV and be able to watch them work. I love your character and the dynamic with you and your dad, Elliot Stabler, played by Christopher Maloney. Is that right? What is it like working with him and kind of just like being on set and everything?
Chris is great. I mean, he's really amazing. He's so committed.
Yeah.
And we have a great fan base and a lot of people love to show up to our sets.
No way.
And you know, getting to watch his professionalism with everybody and taking pictures with everybody and FaceTiming all their friends on their phones and selfies. And he's so, you know, loving, and his work is so brilliant. I mean, there's been a few times where we've been doing scenes and I'll just find myself like watching him from an audience perspective. And then I'm, I have to go, oh wait, no, we're okay. No. We're in the scene together. Like I have to get back, but you know, cause he's so captivating, which is, you know, and he's obviously been doing this for a long time. So, you know, it's just since he's been doing it for a long time, I think that's a testimony to how great he is. Cause he's, yeah,
he's extremely talented.
He's really great.
Yeah, and it's cool because like seeing you guys on the screen together, it's wild how like similar your features are. He has very distinct features and you match them perfectly.
Yeah, I know. That's great.
Yeah, I mean,
happy that worked out.
That makes sense, right? I mean, that's why you're probably casted. But that's so cool. What is it like to work on set? Like, because you guys are currently filming season two. So like, what is it filming in these COVID kind of times?
Oh man, it was crazy, especially season one.
Yeah,
because it was one of the first NBC productions to start up, or one of the first, I guess, productions anywhere to start up. We began maybe January,
really,
of last year.
Oh my god!
So, and it was still, it was getting a little bit better then, but not really. So, you know, acting with masks in rehearsals, a challenge. And, you know, as you know from on set. Oh, we also, speaking of on set, we have to mention Forever at some point.
Oh my god, yeah.
Anyway, so as you know on set, you know, the group lunches, the table reads, all that stuff. That stuff doesn't exist
anymore.
You know, I think that it's everyone separated. I mean, you get your lunch delivered to you in your own dressing room and that's it. You know, you're very social distanced and, you know, it was definitely challenging and odd, but it's getting better. Luckily, some restrictions are lifting up. You know, whenever we do outside scenes, we don't have to wear masks and that's really great. I won't give too much away, but is this coming out next Thursday?
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess the episode tonight, there is an outside scene that I am in. That's all I will say. And
amazing.
That was the first time I got to see a lot of our crew's face.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we're always inside.
Interesting.
And we've done a few other outside scenes, but we just were given permission to not wear a mask outside very recently.
Right.
So that was the first outside scene that I was a part of that I could see everybody's face. I was like, oh my god,
I know, it's like meeting you for the first time.
Yeah, I was like, wait, who are you? Are you that person? So it's been weird. Yeah, it's been weird.
Do you have to like, okay, obviously, I'm sure, I won't assume, but I'm sure everyone has to be vaccinated, right?
Yes.
Do you guys do like daily like testing?
Yeah, we get tested 48 hours before we're on set.
Okay.
And then we used to have a rapid before we enter any NBC facility, but we don't have to wrap it anymore.
Oh, okay.
So it's just the PCR 48 hours before and then a quarantine before you go on set. So
good stuff.
Yeah.
And that, and you've been like just cranking it out with like school and filming and everything. Like, and as I alluded to earlier, you just recently had a birthday and you're 18 so you don't have to do tutoring on set.
Right.
Talk to me first about tutoring on set, and then we're going to talk about what it's like to not have a tutor on set and how to still keep up with schoolwork.
Yeah. Tutoring on set is great.
Yeah.
It's really, it's kind of too great.
It is.
It's kind of, you know, it can be very easy to get work done.
Yeah.
The tutors are very generous. And it's always fun, especially when you have other kids.
Mm.
It's funny, my tutor, her name is Nancy, love Nancy. She,
for Law and Order?
Yeah.
Okay.
She was tutoring other kids in other projects at the same time as me because we were tutoring over Zoom. Mm-hmm. So she was able to tutor a lot of kids in all these other shows.
Oh my god! And like time. A breakout.
Yeah. Oh so my we god. Were all in one Zoom room, and we would all go to breakout rooms, and she would just visit everybody.
That's awesome.
So I guess it wasn't. It's not the same as being in the same room with everybody, but you know, it's tutoring is. I think I have developed liking one-on-one teaching,
yeah,
because of tutoring on set.
Mm-hmm. We're spoiled.
Yeah, very spoiled.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, it does motivate you too. Like, you know, you have 3 hours of school like a day that you're technically like required to do, right?
Right.
And so like, or like you bank it and you like kind of take it away from your bank, but you're like, oh shoot, I only have like this chunk of time to like complete this. So it does like motivate you. So there's like pros and cons, but like you said.
Yeah, there's pros about, you definitely get work done.
Yeah.
It was very hard for me now to do, you know, like some type of algebra assignment during we're switching, you know, camera angles. I have to like
right.
go do 5 minutes of tutoring.
I know.
And that's very hard for me to remain focused.
Yeah.
Because of the, you know, my method and everything. So that was very hard, but you do get a lot of work done and that's good.
Totally. And now talk to me what it was like to like, well, what it is like, not was like, to like not have a tutor and kind of when you're on set, like
right.
when do you, or do you like, do you have this system now where you're like still figuring out, like you get your work done before you go to set or do you do it on set?
I just kind of do my work like I wasn't on set. Just kind of here in my room whenever I have the time.
Sure.
I'm not taking a lot of classes this year.
Oh, okay, so that's good.
It's very easy for me to get my work done this year.
Senior year, baby.
I know. So, I mean, college applications are
right.
a whole other thing. But so I'm not taking a lot of classes, so it's easy for me to get my work done.
You poor child.
Yeah.
You poor child. I just realized that. You're doing school. You're doing college applications. And you're filming a TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
No. It's a great... It's busy, but it's a great busy.
Uh-huh.
It's a very great problem to have.
Yeah.
I'd rather be busy than not busy. So
totally.
So yeah, I kind of just do my work whenever, and not having a tutor on set hasn't been an issue yet for me getting my work done.
Right.
You know, I'm not there every day, so it's, you know, I have some time. I do. I'm probably there, you know, once a week or
That's good.
Once every week and a half or something like that, you know.
Yeah, and I appreciate you fitting me into your little.
Oh no, it's fine. Today is a very light day for me. So
good.
It was great.
I'm glad it worked out. Okay, so let's move on to this fan question.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Okay, so one of the patrons of Take A Bow, Diana Damore, sent in a question. Well, she sent in both a comment and a question, and both
read
of them are
the
really
comment.
Good.
Read so, me the comment first.
Yeah, I definitely want to read them both. So she said, I'm a big fan of the Law and Order saga, especially SVU. I've watched OC, I'm assuming that's Organized Crime, as well. And whenever I see Nikki, I think of Take A Bow. It's awesome that he's going to be he's going to be on the podcast as a guest. And then the question is...
Wonderful.
Yeah. My question, very sweet of her, by the way. My question for him is, my questions for him are, what is it like working on working on TV versus working on stage?
Great
and
question.
Do you prefer one over the other? So
okay.
You answer that
That's
one first.
A really awesome question.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different craft.
Yeah.
It's a different thing. It's totally different. Obviously the literal differences of you have a camera in front of you and you get to see it's much closer as you would be, you know, if you're sitting in the back row of a theater or if you have, you know, a square box that's like just your face.
Right.
It's a very different method of expressing. If I am trying to express to the back row, like we always talk about, you know, that I would look like...
We had to make our tongues bigger.
Right. I would look like an insane person on camera
right.
if I acted. So it would look like I was, I don't know, insane. So it's a whole different technique. It's a whole different style. And in a show, you get to do it every night. mm-hmm. once. In camera, you get to do it a lot, but it's that day.
Right.
So, you know, you have to maintain, you're doing it a very emotional thing, it's not like you can just work yourself up through it throughout the play and then have a moment. You have to keep getting back to that same moment over and over and over again.
Right.
That's the job. And it's just a different thing. I don't know if I have a preference. I guess my preference, no, I don't have a preference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I have a preference.
What's your preference?
Mine's theater.
Yeah.
But solely because I love the fact of the live audience. And I've always said that, like, if I was on, like, a TV show, or if, like, if I was living my best fantasy, like, on Friends or, like, that, like, I could be on a TV set with a live audience, I feel like it would just be, like, so much better. Because I love that immediate feedback that audiences give.
Yes. That's another thing. You do not know how you're doing.
Yeah. It's really hard to know. And I'm always like, what can I do better? Like, what am I doing? Because, like, you know, like, when you do the scene so many times in one day, it you start to question. You're like, oh, did I do something wrong that we have to do it again?
Of course,
yeah. Or, like, you know, like, there's always that thing in the back of your head and whatnot. And the other thing, too, about TV, I love both. I've always said that I love both. And yeah. But I do like that immediate response from audiences, but with TV it's hard too, because like you said, you jump around, and it's not like literally you can be doing two or three different episodes in a day, you know, like, yes. So like you're like, what part am I doing? What is this episode as a whole? What is my character arc in this episode? You
yeah,
know
yeah like, well yeah we don't shoot things in order.
No,
I think that's people, a lot of times people think that it's in order, or I don't know why, but people think that. And I guess if you don't know, then how would you know?
No, exactly.
So yeah, it can be challenging to shoot something that's at the end of an episode when we have to remember the past,
right?
Keep that in you. And then I think that's fine doing an ending. If you're doing an ending first and a beginning last, the first part of that, I'm doing the ending first, is fine, because it's just like any other scene. You just have a background in your head. But when you're doing the beginning after you've done the mm-hmm. last, trying to block out what you've done like yesterday and say that doesn't exist anymore, that's more challenging.
Yeah. But knowing that result while you're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, that's also for any kind of performance, you know?
Right.
That's being in the moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Acting is tough, man. Acting is tough. Okay, here's the other question. Oh, I kind of took it away from her, but we're going to do it anyways. My other question is, what is it like working with Chris Maloney and Mariska Hargitay?
Yes.
But wait, there's also more. And not only being part of this iconic franchise, but also being a part of a new series that is adding something new to a franchise that has been around for over 20 years.
Yes. So I will start with Mariska and Chris are wonderful. I have the great pleasure of acting with both of them often.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully. Well, I'm not going to spoil it. I'm not going to say anything besides that. Hopefully that already wasn't a spoiler, but I get to act with them often. And, you know, a lot of my scenes are with the two of them. And then also my grandma on the show, played by Ellen Burstyn.
Mm.
Ellen is, I mean, my job is extremely easy when I get to work with any of those three people.
Right.
Because, you know, I mean, Ellen, you know, she's my best actress. She's amazing. And they're so great. And I was so surprised, especially my first day of set in season one. If anybody knows the show, my first scene that I ever filmed was my mother's funeral scene, which was a bit nerve-wracking, my first day on set and having to like cry over my mother's death. And that was also the first scene they did in the entire series.
Wow.
That was the first scene that they ever did. So, But and Mariska and Chris were both in that, and I was so surprised and so happy to see their commitment, because like you said, the series has been on for 20 plus years. And well, the original Law and Order, it may be, is it 30? I don't know. A long, very long time. Decade. Not decades. Right?
Decades? Yeah, decades.
Decades?
Yeah. That's just
words. So, you know, their commitment is like it's day one for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they care so much, and we're there to work, and that's it. You know, it's just about the work, and it's just about an exploration of these characters in these situations and how they would act and how they would do. And it's not about anything else besides let's just explore this script that we're given.
Right.
And it's kind of a great thing. And they're great. Yeah, this is my answer to that.
That's your answer to that. And do you want to touch a little bit on just like being a part of the Law and Order franchise and kind of like what that means to you? Were you a big Law and Order fan like already?
I definitely, yeah, for sure. I mean, I watched the SVU
mm-hmm.
and the original one. I mean, it's on TV all the time.
Right.
You could probably turn on TV right now and it'd probably be a rerun somewhere. And so definitely, I definitely would watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very honored to be a part of it now.
Yeah.
And it's really, really great. It's really great.
Yeah, it's really great. I love the show. I watched a bunch of episodes like within the past like 2 days to right. like be like kind of know what to talk about.
Yeah,
But no, it's awesome. I love seeing you up there, and like you said, like everyone is just, you can tell, very, very dedicated to their yeah. craft, to the work that they're doing.
Yeah.
And just like everyone, I mean, in to be in that franchise, it's iconic. Like, you know, yeah. like everyone knows the Law and Order franchise yes. at some point. So it's the best of the best, and you're a part of that. So
yeah, it's really wonderful.
Yeah. You said you wanted to talk about Forever.
I think we should mention it.
Okay.
Well, we were both, for people listening, there was a show called Forever on ABC.
Oh my God.
And Eli was on it for a while, right?
Well, I mean, we only did one season, but
okay,
yes.
That's true.
I was on it a lot.
Was it 8 episodes?
The season was, I think, 12, and I was on about 7 or 8.
Okay.
So around that.
And I just did one.
And we had no idea, by the way,
no.
that either of us were on the show at the time, because we didn't get to work with each other.
No. I think that, I don't even think, were you even in the episode that I was in?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't remember. It was a long time ago.
Yeah,
it was
like 2016. I worked with Caleb on that
okay.
episode. You know, Stranger Things. And so, yeah, so that was the only kid I got to work with for that episode. I never saw you.
Yeah, we didn't see each other. And I was obviously like, I watched the show, like we were,
yeah.
I was in it, you know?
Yeah.
So I was watching it and I was like, Nikki? And so like, I remember like texting you and being like, you're in Forever.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I am. I was like, oh my God, what? That's so cool. But yeah, it was just a cool like moment.
Yeah.
I feel like that always happens, you know, like even like random things throughout, like it's always like, wow, like everything is so connected. It's just, it's incredible to like
yeah.
see your friends like doing the same project as you without even knowing it.
I know.
Especially in that world, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny. We had, on the premiere of SVU and Organized and OC that we had a few weeks ago, there was a girl who I went to school with who was in the SVU episode before me.
Oh my God.
And so it was funny. I sent her an Instagram message and I was like, so good to see you on the show. And she's like, are you on the show?
Oh my God.
And I was like, wait another 30 minutes.
Right.
And then you'll see me.
Like, yeah.
You know,
that's hilarious.
So, yeah, we were obviously, she's SVU and I was OC, but it was just funny to see that. So I know it's funny how that all, so everybody's connected.
Yeah, for real. Well, I would be remiss not to talk about the Take a Bow music that you so generously made.
Do you have seasons on here?
I've thought about it, but I've never taken a break, so I've never done seasons.
Well, next time you have a season, I'll make you a new theme.
A new theme?
Yeah, yeah. If you want, or if it's a thing now, then I won't. But it, or maybe a what? Did you had your 100th episode?
No. You're gonna be 73.
Okay. So maybe for your 100, that would be.
We'll have a little rewrite moment.
Or just a 100th episode special.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm down. I love it. You know, it really has like become a thing. Like Sydney and I would always, and even I still do it. Like we would start like our little episodes, and then we would have it like. So the way that they do it is like it. They open every episode with like, you're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Yeah.
And they have like the network that we're with, like has their own like little intro. So yes. We just do that. And then we will start talking immediately after their intro. And then when we introduce the guests, so like I said, like we play the music and then it'll go into this week. We have Nikki Torsha on the podcast. But every time we like, sing along with it, and like now it's like in everybody's head. It's catchy.
That's great. I'm glad
you literally did like 10 versions of that for us. We were really picky on that.
No, you should. I'm glad you were picky on it because you got what you wanted. I feel like that's always a weird pet peeve of mine.
Really,
people, because it's funny. Anytime anybody watches any of my work or anything like that. Obviously, the phrase everybody always says is, "You're so great."
Yeah.
And I'm always like, "Really? That was the best performance you've ever seen in your life?"
Right.
It's like, no, it was not. So that was a nice answer. But what did you think about it? Because I genuinely want feedback on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I want to grow and I want to get better.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate when people are picky and give harsh feedback because, you know, I'd rather you do that than just be like, it's great and then not use it or say it's great and then hate it and then be stuck with it.
Right.
You know? So yeah, that's great.
Yeah. I mean, we are you like, especially me, like I usually am like more of like the, oh, that was great. Like so cool. Like better than anything I could do. Like, you know, like, and then like, but you sent us like three or four like really cool and very different options where we were like, wait, what if like, this part sounded like the other part from the other track. And so like, then you like were combining, it was just really cool to see like everything that you were doing. Like you were, did you just like, how does that work? Like, did you do it? Did you play the instruments? Did you do it on your computer?
I
think
I played them. I don't remember, honestly. I'll have to find the original file of where it is on my computer and break it down and remember what I did.
Yeah.
But yeah, I played it, but.
And then you do music of your own. Like you have a song called Specialty.
Well, yeah.
That is literally one of my favorites. Like literally, I remember like you were writing it and you were like sending me versions of it. And you were like, or like swipe up on my story if you want to like listen to my song before I release it. And I was like, this is so good. Like,
I was like, that was a fun one. I mean, there's, you know, now that the show's moving in second season and I feel a little bit more settled.
Right.
I have a lot of other songs that are done that I just never put out.
Really?
And once we cut the audio, I'll maybe if you want, I'll play you some.
Oh my God.
But there's a lot of them that I made after that. Maybe two or three.
Okay.
That are done. And I just wasn't perfect for me. I had done small edits for a long time and then kind of just gave up on it. So I need to, this year, maybe I'll revisit. It's always been a dream of mine to get a music project together.
Yeah.
Is that something EP or something?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it would be cool.
Yeah.
It would have to be great because I would have to like really spend a lot of time on it because I never want to put anything out there that's not my best for anything. So
sure.
But maybe we'll see. We'll see.
Do you like the music stuff?
I love it. Yeah. I love it. I mean, I love doing that. I love writing. I love any kind of artistic avenue that I can put out there. It's something about that that is, I guess, somewhere inside me that needs that, whatever it is. So it exercises the same muscles as acting does for me. And, you know, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. And tells your story, you know, like not yes. a character.
Yes. Well, although I do think a lot of what I show through my character on, especially on this show, is a lot of me or versions of myself or stuff that it's always interesting, you know, feeling comfortable doing that or gives you a way to express yourself in a way that you wouldn't be comfortable expressing yourself as totally. You. So it's very therapeutic, actually. But yes, expressing myself literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh my gosh.
Well, Nikki, I mean, that's kind of everything I have today.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you so much for doing this. And thank you for welcoming me into your home. We have some candles. He like had like a whole setup for me.
I'm very into candles and incense, and I'm I do a lot of meditation and stuff. So anytime you come over, we'll light some candles and in celebration.
Yes, and meditate. I like that. Oh, I'm getting into that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, honestly, I mean, we've been friends for so long now, and I just appreciate everything that, you know, you've done for me, especially in this podcast, you know, like even like everyone listening, they all know who you are. You know, we talk about you all the time, so I'm glad we are finally able to do this. Awesome. Yeah, definitely over, what is it, definitely a long way overdue. Yeah,
long time.
Yeah, this is definitely but anyways, thank you for doing this. I can't thank you enough, and thank you for sharing all your stories.
Of course, man, thank you for having me.
I
really appreciate you letting me come on here.
Oh my god, we love it. So for everyone listening, where can they find you, and where can they follow you, and
keep so up on everything? Pretty much the only social media I have is Instagram.
Okay,
my name, Nikki Torsha.
That's amazing.
That's my handle. And then
Torsha, Torchia.
Perfect. Yeah. Nailed it.
Just in case. And then Nikki with a Y.
Nikki with a Y. And Thursdays on NBC at 10 o'clock.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Law and Order, Organized Crime. Good stuff. Appreciate Thank you all.
Appreciate it.
Take a bow, Nikki Torsha. Oh my gosh. Literally all of these incredible things that he's brought up. It was wonderful to talk to him about the dynamics of kind of like going from not doing a tutor on set, not like kind of being like a kid, and then in the next day you're an adult technically, and just how set changes and life changes on set, and kind of the just everything changes. People don't really think about the difference of a day, and it's kind of it's really fascinating to me. I appreciate Nikki for coming on, joining us as always with our guests. I enjoyed talking to him about Christmas Story. I enjoyed talking to him about the Take a Bow music, which is always exciting for me. and I loved his ideas for 100 episodes. I love his idea for the 100th episode, new music change up. So I'm very excited for that. We're going to see how that goes and what may come of that, which is to me very exciting. When he said that, I was like, oh my god. So everyone stay tuned on that. 100 episodes is going to be one to check out. And just everything he's doing right now, I mean, just the way that he's been able to transition himself to a mindset where it was kind of just like theater to doing both TV and film and music. It's fascinating stuff, and it's just crazy to see how performers and everyone in this industry kind of has to adjust in so many ways, just by their age, by their height, by their look, whatever it may be. There's so many things that goes into being a performer in this industry and an artist in this industry. It's really incredible, and I loved highlighting Nikki's journey and story surrounding that, and it's just another piece of evidence that it's not easy to be a child actor and kind of predict transition into just the teen world, and you really have to get lucky and be talented, of course, but a lot of it is luck too, and you're at the right place in the right time, and you look like the right person, and Nikki's been able to do that, and he's been wildly successful, and it's just so exciting. I love when you can see people that you know succeed. Diana DeMore, thank you so much for sending in your question. He was very, very excited about it. For everyone else who's a patron of Take a Bow, continue to send in those questions, because guests love that, and they love hearing from you and not just this kid over here on the mic who kind of just asks questions that sometimes are repetitive, and but it always gives a new answer. So that's why I continue to do it. But there was so much more we could have talked about with Nikki. I'm just really grateful that he came on to share what it was like. I mean, obviously, Calvin just talked about the COVID protocols backstage in a show. And now Nikki got to talk a little bit about that on. And then Nikki talked about that, what it was like to be on set. He kind of alluded to many different things about his character moving forward. He talked about, of course, his experience in A Christmas Story with me. It was really cool to relive those memories and to talk about King and I and his relationship with Bart Schur and how that kind of influenced his route and kind of made him the performer that he is today. It's just incredible. It was just really good stuff. And I hope that you were all able to learn and kind of pick up on things. You know, like a lot of this stuff is like hidden stuff that they kind of just share stories, but there's so much to pick up from them. Just like something as small as, you know, being able to be at King and I and pick up so many things from Bart Schur's wife, who helped Nikki be the actor that he is today and kind of be confident as an actor. And that's just something that, like, you don't even think of. And every opportunity of whoever you're working with, you can always learn from them, and it can always shape your craft and whatever you're doing. And you can always pick up things and take things. And every person who comes into your life influences you in some way. So I think that was a huge message there. And I just really appreciated him being so open. So I really think this is a great episode. Thank you all for listening. I'm actually going to do a drama dictionary before I leave. So stay with me here. This week, we talked to Nikki about Elf the musical and how it's just when you think of Elf and you're like, oh, how is that a musical? Is it going to be Christmas carols? What is it going to be? And it actually has this incredible score. But what is a score? A score, isn't that like a goal? Isn't that like a sports term? No, okay? And you want to know something? I know I'm like waitress heavy on this show, but waitress is one of those scores that's just like a non-skip for me. And I think it's one of those scores that doesn't have a bad song. So I'm kind of giving you some context here to maybe figure it out on yourself. But if you haven't figured it out yourself yet, a score is what they call all of the, just the music in the show. So all of the music and all the sheet music and everything, all of that is called a score. So when you go and you're like, oh, that's a cast recording. And it's like, oh, well, that's the score of the show. You know, like that's the music in the show. It's called the score. If you're in rehearsals for a musical or you're doing like a summer camp or you're doing a voice lesson or something, your music director or whoever's in charge is going to be like, oh, flip to this song in your score, or oh, flip to this page in your score. That's exactly what that means. And so that it just means to go to your music section. It's solely music. It's not anything to do with the script. And it's just a completely different section. So, that's what the score is. It is not, it is a sports term, but not in this situation. And, that's this week's Drama Dictionary Word of the Week. So that's all I have for this week. This is episode 73, which is one of my favorite numbers. Yeah, that's all I have for you all this week. I appreciate you all for listening. I appreciate you all for coming back. And welcome to all the new listeners. And it was a great week, and I can't wait to continue consuming some of that Broadway content and Broadway shows that I've been fortunate enough to go see. So I will obviously keep you guys all updated and give you my thoughts and opinions just because I like to share them. I'm not sure if how you all react to them, but that's okay. It's like a therapy session for me to talk about Broadway. So thank you all, and I will see you all next week. Bye, everyone. For this episode's curtain call, I would like to recognize a few people who also deserve to take a bow. This podcast would not be possible without the help from Dory Berenstain, Brittany Bigelow, Katie Rosen, Alan Seals, and the team at the Broadway Podcast Network. Next in line to take the bow is Tessie Tokash, who edits the audio and all the visuals for this podcast. A special thanks to patrons Brian Thompson, Pat McNamara, the listeners at PCC, as well as all of the other patrons for their continued support. If you're interested in becoming a patron, go to patreon.com/TAB. And if you enjoyed this week's episode, don't forget to subscribe on the platform that you're currently listening to this on. Also, feel free to give us a follow on Instagram at TakeAbow Podcast. TakeAbow's logo is designed by Giselle Bustos, and the music is by Nikki Torsha and Cormac Collinon. Bye, everyone. Hope to see you next week.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.